let me also just sort of comment on the ODP process. We didn't expect the endorsement out of that. It was pretty clear that the result had been preconceived, and it became very clear even in the screening process when publicly announced supporters or at least one very adamant public supporter of my opponent was on the committee and was not particularly respectful to me during the committee discussion. In fact, stormed out of the room at one point. And then one of the other people in the committee was somebody who I didn't think was a publicly announced supporter, but I knew had a very close personal relationship going back decades. As I looked around the room, I realized what the result was going to be, and we were just surprised that it was as close as it was on, even though, it was pre-cooked, we were surprised that there was a one vote difference on the recommendation. But it doesn't really matter. I mean, people have beat ODP endorsements before. This is an endorsement that what's interesting is it sparked a bit of a backlash. There were people that then endorsed me later that had told me before they were going to stay neutral, and I think they did it in large part because they thought that the process was unfair and unwise. And it is a shame that it seems that my appeal for fairness and equal opportunity to the full executive committee fell on deaf ears. It would be one thing if there were two candidates. I'm thinking of Sherrod Brown's race, for example, where I can't remember the guy's name, thankfully.
The Kaiser?
Right. But that's my point. It would be one thing in that situation where, ODP makes an endorsement. That is understandable. But when you have two candidates who follow different career paths and, both of them worthy career paths, not necessarily both the right ones for AG in my judgment, but still, and other people might be looking at it going, all right, these are two qualified candidates, then, why would you choose to make that decision for primary voters and do it based simply on the raw exercise of power, networks, and cronyism? I think I would have felt much better about the process if it really seemed like Wood County, and even if the result had gone the other way. I would have been able to say, something, you win some, you lose some, that was a big one, but it was a fair and open process, not one in which favors were being paid back and that kind of thing. So we'll see. I mean, I'll just mention one other thing about this and let it go, but I find it curious that the rationale that is offered for why it has to be done, we must do this, is because we've all got to unite behind the candidate and make this whole thing cheaper. And when both candidates are saying, oh, and by the way, if you don't endorse me, I'm still moving forward, you don't have that rationale anymore. So even the preferred rationale for doing it is not correct. And if anything, redoubled my camp's determination to move forward and offer the voters a clear choice.
Can I interject one quick thing? In the report that came out about the smaller screening committee, there was a report that said someone asked you if you would support the candidate, and your answer was no.
That was an uncomfortable moment. My answer was not no, but my answer was as follows. The question that was asked was two parts. Would you support the ticket, and would you support your primary opponent? I said, absolutely, I'll support the ticket. I always have. We've got to win these offices back, and it's not an issue. I'll be happy to go out on the trail and do whatever's required. I said, as to the second question, I am uncomfortable with that, and here's why. Because there are issues of which I am aware regarding competence and ethics that have not yet been publicly discussed. And with that context in mind, I'm uncomfortable saying that. Now, I've been around Democratic politics for long enough to know the right answer to that question. The right answer to that question is yes, I will, you know, goose-step along with the rest of you. But as a lawyer and as a guy who teaches legal ethics to the next generation of law students, the moment they ask me that question with a particular case in mind, I just pictured myself looking at my students and trying to justify to them why, you know, I would support under those circumstances. Now, I don't know whether, you know, the things of which I'm aware will become a part of the public dialogue or not. Based on the stuff that's out on the public record already, you know, that's already been discussed on the blogs and the newspapers, my answer to that question would have been yes, absolutely. But based on additional information of which I'm aware that's actually out on the public record but kind of hidden away, the answer is that I'm uncomfortable. And that's not a no, that's not a yes, but I am uncomfortable.
And I hope
that people will be more, if that information becomes a part of the public dialogue at any point, it surely will if my opponent is the nominee and, you know, Betty Montgomery is running against him, because then it surely will be a part of the public debate. But I hope at some point the people in the Democratic Party who value loyalty above all other values will be given pause and will say, you know what, maybe loyalty shouldn't be valued over everything else, particularly where confidence and ethics are concerned, or we become like the Republicans. And I hope that people will be a little more forgiving at that point than they were then. And look, let's face it, what happened was, I know the right answer to that question, and my opponents used that to whip me around.
Yeah, I'm not so forgiving about that.
Well, you know. We took the high road. People didn't think we did, but we took the high road. We gave the information that we had to Congressman Strickland's campaign, and we gave it to them 24 hours before the vote. So here it is. And the results still came out the way it did. So.
Well, when I look at the political methods that are being used by the Ohio Democrats, specifically around Republican corruption, isn't it all purely an exercise in political opportunism? The thing that always haunts me is the Conyers report and the documentation to me, which of thousands of violations of the law, disenfranchisement of possibly hundreds of thousands of people, of the right to vote that people were lynched over, the right to vote that we fought a revolution over, and thousands of laws broken. And I remember Ken Blackwell going on television and talking about this and saying, there are two Republicans and there are two Democrats on every election board. It's a bipartisan system, and for what you're describing to have happened, both sides would have had to been in on it. And then I look at what the Democrats did. Now, to me, in the case of clear violations of the law, and the case where we had officers in place to enforce the law, the Democrats didn't do it. The Green Party, the Libertarian Party, stepped up. But in the clear case where you had a chance to actually do the job and enforce the system of the most fundamental right that there is in this country, the most sacred right that we have, the Democrats were nowhere to be found. In that case, there was nothing. In the case of CoinGate, it's a pure partisan play. I see this, we want somebody in the AG's job to prosecute Republicans. That's what I'm hearing. Even though, I'm not hearing the party talk about an attorney general and a return to ethics that attacks on both sides.
Well, you hear talk about it, but it's talk.
Right.
I mean, the attorney general's office is supposed to be above the partisan fray. It's like donning a robe when you become Attorney General and Secretary of State and Auditor to an extent, because those are the accountability offices. Secretary of State is accountability in the electoral process, Auditor is accountability with the money, and Attorney General is accountability with money, legal responsibilities, criminal justice, everything. The Attorney General is supposed to be the people's lawyer running the people's law and not beholden to special interests of the left or the right. But if I became Attorney General, there would be people on the left that would be unhappy with certain decisions I made based upon the law. and there would be people on the right that would be unhappy. But none of those things are supposed to matter. What you are is a chief law enforcement officer. When I was a federal prosecutor, we really took that vision of public service to heart. I mean, first of all, under the Hatch Act, and the rules are actually even stricter for Department of Justice employees, we became pretty nonpartisan. I could attend like a party function, I could get involved in a club, but I couldn't be an officer, I couldn't solicit anybody for money, because it would then create, even for somebody else, I mean, not for myself, I mean, just like, you know, Kumar is running for public office, I want to ask people for money for him. You couldn't do that. And so one of the things that I want to do is bring that kind of public service, restore that sense, I don't even know if it's ever been there, but restore that sense of public service to state government. Because, you know, I was reminded of a story by my wife the other day about, I ever told you a story about the cookies? It was late night plea negotiations, and there were a couple of criminal defense attorneys and a criminal defendant, and it was a white collar case, so you know, we were working late into the night trying to settle the case. And we probably started negotiating around 3 o'clock. The agents and I had lunch together at noon, and we hadn't eaten. And we worked late into the night, past midnight. At some point, the defense attorneys and the defendant went out, got some food. They probably ate at Subway, brought some cookies back, some chocolate chip cookies. They put them out on the table and offered them to us. And we kept declining. Well, at the end of the evening, when the negotiations broke up, the agents and I were debriefing on the whole discussion, and somehow the subject of the cookies came out. And I said, my goodness, guys, it's past midnight. You guys haven't eaten all day. You know, we haven't eaten since noon. Why didn't you eat the cookies? They said, well, we weren't going to eat the cookies. Why didn't you eat the cookies? I said, well, I wasn't going to eat the cookies. And then we all fell over laughing. Now, would we have been personally corrupted by these cookies? No. Well, maybe I would have been. But the point is that we have this ethos that was very different. In the political culture, what did Bob Taft get convicted of? You can take the goodies, you just have to report it. We had a completely different culture. You don't even take goodies. So that's what I want to do, and it is a different approach than the sort of opportunistic model that you're talking about, where you see something happen, you know, bad happen that the other side does, and then you just beat and beat and beat and beat that horse. I don't think that's a winning model, because I think that people, that is not to say that you don't highlight these problems and do them in a dramatic fashion, but you better couple it with a positive vision for the office that you're talking about. And so far, I haven't heard, if I had a dollar for every time I've heard the words pay to play, you know, I wouldn't need a job. It's really one of these things where there's a line, and it seems to me that the party sometimes crosses over it, where the lips are moving and they're using the words of all this negativity about the other side, but they're not really understanding that people are becoming immune to that, and that the shock value of those things is beginning to diminish. It's like the studies about if you watch too many images of violence, you become immune and desensitized. And we risk doing that because we have to not only talk about, look at these terrible things that they did and do it in a dramatic way to get people's attentions, but then say, but this is what the office should be doing or could be doing. This is what I could do. And we'd better back it up with a record of accomplishment to match the promises, which is, I think, one of the most dramatic differences in my primary. I have a record of accomplishment as a lawyer and a prosecutor and a public manager and chief executive of an 82-person law firm, which I did to much acclaim. And I've actually done the very things that I'm saying that I'm going to do. So anybody who wants to know, will I really do them, they don't need to, like, strap me up to a lie detector. They just need to look at what I've done.
Well, no.
Sorry.
The thing that always frustrates me in all this is that isn't the first place, if you're going to practice what you preach, to practice it within your party? I don't see that at all.
What, like, don't be cronyistic?
Yes. If you're going to attack the Republicans for being cronies and for basically, you know, warping the law in order to help themselves, don't you have to police yourself? I mean, I don't see any internal policing within the Ohio Democratic Party.
They're blissfully unaware of what they're doing. I mean, look, oh boy, at risk of being reprimanded by my strategist and campaign manager, let's be really, really honest about the Attorney General's race. This is a hiring choice, okay? If the Attorney General's job is to be the people's lawyer and run the people's law firm, all people are doing is looking to hire a lawyer. And everybody knows when you're in deep trouble, you go out and you get the best lawyer you can find. Okay, so now you got two lawyers. You got one is a former federal prosecutor who cleaned up corruption and fraud in the healthcare industry, receiving an award from the FBI director. Was a large firm litigator handling complex litigation on behalf of individuals, small businesses, and larger businesses. Was counsel to the head of the ABA, worked for the former Democratic governor, big city law director, actually running a people's law firm with criminal and civil divisions, fighting predatory lenders. And then you've got an opponent who's been a career political operative who deserves credit for having raised the profile of the corruption issues when other people in the party were brain dead, who is an energetic legislator who's continually introducing legislation, most of which has no prayer of passage, and practices primarily divorce law, which has no conceivable relevance to the Attorney General's office other than perhaps breaking up the newfound marriage between Betty Montgomery and Jim Petro. So now, faced with this choice, the party says, well, of course, we'll take the career political operative. When, if they took a broader national view, and by the party, I'm just talking about not the people of the party, but the party structure, the apparatchiks, the Soviets, the Politburo. I'm going to get big trouble back.
Keep those words coming.
but that's the choice that they make. And they don't take a broader view. I mean, they don't take a look at New York and say, look at the Elliott Spitzer model. Has anybody ever heard of Dennis Vacco? Dennis Vacco is the guy that Elliott Spitzer beat. Another Betty Montgomery, another Jim Petro, another do-nothing. And Spitzer is a career prosecutor and litigator who had not run for public office, who says, let's go take that law firm and let's make it the people's law firm once more. Yep. So it's not like this is without historical precedent if the ODP decided to look at what can be done.